If jazz is a language, a folklore for the oppressed that sometimes seems in danger of becoming the preserve of highbrow curators, then surely Billie Holiday was one of its greatest storytellers. Her legend and her art are inexorably bound together. Her image is indelibly etched on a kind of African-American Mount Rushmore, an icon now suitable for posters and postage stamps. Holiday is in a triad of tragic jazz figures, usually placed between the ecstatic, tormented grace of Bud Powell and the swirling frenzy of Charlie Parker. All three struggled for respect in a society that bestowed notoriety as a reward instead. Their drug busts and hospitalizations often made more news than their records. Billie Holiday died on July 17, 1959, and we'll be devoting tonight's edition of Nightlights to Billie. Mal Waldron, in 1959, was Billie Holiday's last accompanist, and shortly after her death in July, he recorded an album, a tribute to her, called Left Alone. It was done in November of 1959, and we'll hear him talking with fellow jazz musician and record producer Teddy Charles shortly before hearing a composition that Waldron and Holiday co-wrote called Left Alone.
Well, Mal, I know that you are very serious about your past association with the great Billie Holiday. That association has a lot to do with this album and also your music in general. Would you care to discuss that?
Well, naturally, playing behind a singer like Billie, I received a lot of influence from her way of singing. I've always wanted to play for her. And she helped my phrasing so much because she made me so aware of words so that I would try to study the lyrics of a tune before I tried to play it. Like, for instance, the numbers on the album that we're doing now, the You Don't Know What Love Is. I'm very aware of the words, and I try to bring that out when I'm playing the melody. She helped me along those lines. And of course, the tune that she wrote the lyrics of, I feel very close to that because I was there when she got them together. We were on a plane going to San Francisco, and we had about 7 hours to kill. You know, nothing to do on the plane but just sleep or talk. So she decided she wanted to do a tune, and she wanted it to be about her life.
Probably be a good idea to put the lyrics in the liner notes.
Yeah, I'd like to do that.
I would see that. I was very impressed with myself.
It's a tune that I feel that I'd like the public to hear. She felt she wanted it to be the story of her life, pretty much, you know.
Mal Waldron and Jackie McLean with Left Alone from the 1959 Bethlehem album of the same name. How did Eleanor Harris emerge from 1920s Baltimore to become Billie Holiday, the famous Lady Day? How did she turn her art into a political weapon by daring to sing Strange Fruit, a protest song against lynching, at the height of segregation in 1939? And how did this child who ran away at age 14 grow up to become the confidant of an anonymous audience's heartbreak and broken dreams? We wouldn't know the life of Billie Holiday if we didn't have the art. Listening to her is like one of those hauntingly intimate conversations you sometimes have with a stranger on a bus or a train. The beauty of her talent lay in the aching grain of her voice, the ability of that voice to endow everyday suffering with dignity, and the capacity to register her rage about that suffering at the same time. She could also summon up a kick-out-the-jams kind of joy, especially on her 1930s recordings with Teddy Wilson, and later in her career could still suffuse a song with a languid sense of contentment. Above all, she sounded as if she meant it. Here's Billie Holiday in 1956, a concert that was celebrating the publication of her autobiography, Lady Sings the Blues. It's preceded by Gilbert Milstein reading an excerpt from the book.
This is Billie Holiday's story. Mom and Pop were just a couple of kids when they got married. He was 18, she was 16, I was 3. I was a woman when I was 6, big for my age, with big breasts, big bones, just a big, fat, healthy broad. So I started working out then, before school and after, minding babies, running errands, and scrubbing those damn white steps all over Baltimore. And I never got beyond the 5th grade. But whether I was riding a bike or scrubbing somebody's dirty bathroom floor, I used to love to sing all the time. I liked music. If there was a place where I could go and hear it, I went. Alice Dean used to keep a whorehouse on the corner nearest our place. And I used to run errands for her and the girls. When it came time to pay me, I used to tell her she could keep the money if she'd let me come up in her front parlor and listen to Louis Armstrong and Bessie Smith on her Victrola. I guess I'm not the only one who heard their first good jazz in a whorehouse, but I never tried to make anything of it. If I'd heard Louis and Bessie at a Girl Scout jamboree, I'd have loved it just the same. But a lot of white people first heard jazz in places like Alice Dean's. And they helped label jazz whorehouse music. They forget what it was like in those days. A whorehouse was about the only place where black and white folks could meet in any natural way. They damn well couldn't rub elbows in the churches. And in Baltimore, places like Alice Dean's were the only joints fancy enough to have a Victrola. And for real enough to pick up on the best records. I know this for damn sure. If I'd heard Pops and Bessie wailing through the window of some minister's front parlor, I'd have been running free errands for him. Unless it was the records of Bessie Smith and Louis Armstrong I heard as a kid, I don't know of anybody who actually influenced my singing, then or now. I always wanted Bessie's big sound and Pops' feeling. No two people on earth are alike, and it's got to be that way in music, or it isn't music. I can't stand to sing the same song the same way two nights in succession, let alone 2 years or 10 years. If you can, then it ain't music. It's close order drill, or exercise, or yodeling, or something, but not music.
Baby sings the blues. She's got 'em bad. She feels so sad. Wants the world to know just what her blues is all about. Lady sings the blues. She tells her sad, nothing to hide. Now guess what her blues is all about. The blues ain't nothing but a pain in your heart when you get a bad start. You and your man have to part. I ain't gonna just sit around and cry, and I know I won't die because I love him. Lady sings the blues. She's got 'em bad. She feels so sad. But now the world will know she's never gonna sing 'em no more. No.
Billie Holiday in 1956 performing Lady Sings the Blues, a song that she co-wrote with pianist Herbie Nichols. Here's Billie Holiday in 1955 talking during a rehearsal about one of her first efforts to sing in a nightclub.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Me and my old funny keys. That's what I'm talking about.
I love that key. I just wish I'd been playing it.
I'm telling you, me and my old voice would just go up a little bit and come down a little bit. It is not legit. I do not got a legitimate voice. This voice of mine, a Mr. Cap, got to know what he's doing and pray for me.
Well, that's what I'll do. I'll
scribble
these changes down, and
we'll
all be straight.
It ain't my fault. I just can't go with so high and so low. And that's why, and you know I've been blessed. You know God did bless me because when I first started, I got insulted. My first job, I didn't get the job at Smalls. And they had a cat in New York named Charlie Johnson. It was one of the biggest Negro bands in the country at that time. You didn't hear nothing about nobody but Fletcher Henderson, Charlie Johnson. And that was before Don Redman and, McKinney Cotton Pickers. I was a little kid and I went in there. I was about 13. And I'll never forget it, Mary Johnson got me the audition. And she done went through all this trouble, to get me the audition. I get it. I'm all ready to sing. And this cat asked me, he said, what key are you singing in? I said, I don't know, man. You just play. And they shoot me out of there so fast, it wasn't even funny.
You start playing G-flat.
So from then on, I start remembering. And I would pitch my key to a cat. And I said, what key is that? And he said, man, I love in G, And Billy's Blues and B flat, And that's how I learned my keys. I didn't know nothing about no keys, you know. Oh, I didn't start singing, you know. And I get this little gentleman, and Ed Smalls was the biggest thing in Harlem then. I don't even have you keys. I said, just play it, I'll sing it. And he wouldn't do it and chased me out. Mary Johnson was the star of the show down there, and she went through all this trouble to get me this audition.
Holiday with Life Begins When You're in Love. Before that, we heard her in a 1955 rehearsal talking about her difficulty with her early efforts at singing. One of Billie Holiday's most famous musical cohorts was the tenor saxophonist Lester Young. We'll hear him here speaking to jazz writer Chris Albertson in August of 1958, just a few months before his own death and less than a year before Billie's.
But then you, when did you first meet Billie Holiday?
When I came to New York in 1934. I used to live at a house with her mother, you know, because I didn't know my way around. And she taught me a lot of things, you know, and got me little record dates, you know, play behind her, little solos and things like that.
Well, you're her favorite soloist.
Well, she is mine, too, so that's a draw.
I understand she gave you the name, Prez, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. And I gave her the name of Lady Day. So right. That was Eva.
But I think she has said that she sort of, her style of singing is formed after your style on the tenor sax.
Well, I think you can hear that on some of the old records, you know. Sometime I'd sit down and listen to myself and it sound like two of the same voices, if you don't be careful, you know, of the same mind or something like that.
Billie Holiday with Lester Young doing This Year's Kisses. Well, in 1939, Billie Holiday performed and recorded a song that came to be so strongly identified with her that many people thought she wrote it, and that was Strange Fruit. The song was actually written by Lewis Allen, a poet who frequented Cafe Society, the first integrated nightclub in New York City and a place where Holiday often sang. Allen, who would later adopt the children of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg after they were executed, brought Holiday the song that described, quote, black bodies swaying in the southern breeze with the scent of magnolias sweet and fresh than the sudden smell of burning flesh. This song about lynching was strong stuff indeed for audiences weaned on pennies from heaven and one, two, button your shoe. One woman followed Holiday into the powder room after she'd performed it, sobbing, don't you ever dare do that song again. Barney Josephson, the owner of Cafe Society, later found out the woman had witnessed a lynching when she was a child. Well, another song that Billie Holiday wrote and performed and recorded that year that's not nearly as well known as Strange Fruit was this one, done in March of 1939, Long Gone Blues, Billie Holiday on Nightlights.
Thank you.
you don't know how. I've been your slave ever since I've been your babe. I've been your slave ever since I've been your babe. But before I be your dog, I'll see you in your grave.
Billie Holiday performing Long Gone Blues, a song that she wrote and recorded in 1939. Billie Holiday wasn't allowed to record Strange Fruit for the label that she was on at the time, and as a result, Milt Gabler had her record the song for Commodore Records, a record label that was based out of a New York City record shop. And she did some more recordings for Commodore in 1944, including this one, Lover Come Back to Me, Billie Holiday on WFIU.
High above, the moon was new, and so was love. This eager heart of mine was singing, lover, where can you be? You came at last. Love had its day. That day is past. You've gone away. This aching heart of mine is singing, lover, come back to me. When I remember every little thing you used to do, I'm so lonely. Every road I walk along with you. No wonder I am lonely. The sky is blue, the night is cold, the moon is new, but love is old. And while I'm waiting here, this heart of mine is singing, lover, come back to me.
when I remember every little thing you used to do, I grow lonely. Every road I walk along, I walk along with you. No wonder the sky is blue, the night is cold, the moon is new, but love is old. And while I'm waiting here, this heart of mine is singing, lover, come back to me.
Billie Holiday with Lover Come Back to Me from the Complete Commodore recordings done in 1944. She was doing those for Milt Gabler, and he signed her later that year to the Decca label, where she recorded for the next 6 years, often with strings, sometimes with choral groups behind her, recordings that were less jazzy than the recordings that she had done earlier for the Columbia label, but recordings that nonetheless found her, some people and some critics think, at the peak of her vocal performance. We're going to hear something from her very first session with Decca, a session which produced Lover Man, which became one of her biggest hits. She did another song in that session that she really looked back on with a lot of affection later on, and that was a song called No More. We're going to hear an alternate take of it that has a not-so-great audio quality, but it just has an even moodier and somewhat spookier feeling to it than the master take that was originally released. This is Billie Holiday with No More. You're listening to Nightlights on WFIU.
No more.
Billie Holiday with an alternate take of No More, recorded in 1944 from the Complete Decca recordings. The pianist Bobby Tucker was not an admirer of Billie Holiday when he first saw her in November 1946 at New York City's Downbeat Club. "Lady Didn't Kill Me," he said. Later on, he would become one of her best accompanists and one of her closest friends, but that night he told his colleague Tony Scott that he didn't like her because "she's got no sound. It's like a flat thing." When Scott asked him who he did like, he named Ella Fitzgerald, and Scott replied, "But with a singer like Ella, when she sings 'My Man Has Left Me,' you think the guy is going down the street for a loaf of bread. But when Lady sings it, man, you see the bags are packed, the cat's going down the street, and you know he ain't never coming back." Here's Bobby Tucker with Billie Holiday, Jazz at the Philharmonic, March of 1947. I cover the waterfront. Billie Holiday live at Jazz at the Philharmonic, March of 1947, with Bobby Tucker doing I Cover the Waterfront. Not long after that, Billie Holiday would suffer a narcotics bust, and she would end up serving a jail term of 1 year and 1 month. She'd be released in late 1948 and would start performing again, but it was a blow to her career, both in terms of performing and just general morale. Here's a song from when she was making live performances again, from the summer of 1949. This is Detour Ahead.
But why am I the only one traveling this way? How strange the road to love can be so easy. Can there be a detour ahead? Wake up, slow down. before you crash and break your heart. Girl of a clown, you fool, your head is in the wrong direction. Can't you see a detour? The farther you travel, the harder to unravel the web. He spins around you. Turn back while there's time. Can't you see that danger sign? Soft shoulders surround you. Smooth road, clear night. Oh, lucky me that suddenly saw the light. I'm turning back away from all that trouble. Smooth road, smooth road, no detour.
Billie Holiday performing Detour Ahead in the summer of 1949. Throughout the 1950s, Billie Holiday continued to struggle with declining health and with drug issues. And she also did a lot of recording, though, for Norman Granz's Verve labels, and a lot of quite good recording. There's a lot of debate about how good Billie Holiday's voice was in the last few years of her life. But many jazz critics feel that many of her performances hold up quite well with her earlier recordings. We'll hear a couple of them. This is one that was done. She had recorded this song in the mid-1930s, I believe in 1935, and then 22 years later recorded it for Norman Granz in 1957. Billie Holiday with I Wished on the Moon on WFIU.
I wished on the moon for something I never knew. I wished on the moon for more than I ever knew. A sweeter rose, a softer sky, an April day that would not dance away. I wished on a star to throw me a beam or two. I begged of a star and asked for a dream or two. I looked for every loveliness. It all came true. I wished on the moon for you. Something I never knew. Wished on the moon for more than I ever knew. A sweeter rose, a softer sky, an April day that would wished on a star to throw me a beam or two. I begged of a star and asked for a dream or two. I look for every loveliness, it all came true. I wished on the moon, wished on the moon, wished on the moon for you.
Billie Holiday with I Wished on the Moon, recorded in 1957. As always, when she recorded with Norman Granz, surrounded by sympathetic musicians, or she was usually surrounded by sympathetic musicians when she recorded for Granz, Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Ben Webster on tenor sax, Jimmy Rowles on piano, Barney Kessel on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, Alvin Stoller on drums. Billie Holiday is well known for the 1958 album Lady in Satin, but a lot of people don't realize that she did record one last album after that. It's just simply called Billie Holiday. It came out on MGM, reissued on CD as Last Recordings. And we'll play a track from that in a moment. It was recorded in March of 1959. Her story is so well known. There are biographies of her out there, some very well written ones, including Wishing on the Moon by Donald Clark. But biographies of artists, after all, are verbal museums. The artist's works are where one finds the garden. Billie Holiday could wed a lifetime of desire and loss into the space of a banal 3-minute pop song. She could make you feel other people's desire and loss as well as your own. You can imagine going into a nightclub to hear her sing, say in 1942 or so. Maybe there are 50 or 60 people there, the men having checked their hats at the door, the women stiff and smiling in their evening outfits. Some of the men may be blown to bits in the next 3 years. They may die in some muddy field 5,000 miles from home. Some of the women may soon find themselves trapped in brutal, loveless marriages, may die their own early deaths of alcoholism or other sinister stagnations. Tonight, maybe, some of them are happy. They're listening to a great artist perform. And that's what Billie Holiday does to you. She makes you feel so many of the lives that have been lived before you, that are being lived beside you right now. Right now, there are 5 billion people on the planet besides you, and Billie Holiday's voice reminds you of that awesome everyday fact. Here's Billie Holiday shortly before her death in 1959 with Don't Worry About Me.
Don't worry about me. Forget about me. Be happy, my love. Let's say that our little show is over, and so the story ends. Why not call it a day? The sensible way, and still be friends. Look out for yourself. Should be the rule. Give your heart and your love to whomever you love. Don't be a fool, darling. Why should you cling to some fading thing that used to be? If you can forget, don't worry about me. Thank you. Darling, why should you cling to some fading thing that used to be? If you can forget, don't worry about me.
Billie Holiday with Don't Worry About Me from Last Recordings on the MGM label. New York City, July 17th, 45 years ago. At 3 in the morning, Billie Holiday lets go of life. Later that day, New York City poet and art museum curator Frank O'Hara would see the news in a newspaper headline, and he would write a poem about it called The Day Lady Died. It's one of his most famous poems. Here he is reading it in 1966.
The Day Lady Died. It is 12:20 in New York, Friday, 3 days after Bastille Day, yes. It is 1959, and I go get a shoeshine because I will get off the 419 in East Hampton at 7:15, and then go straight to dinner, and I don't know the people who will feed me. I walk up the muggy street beginning to sun, and have a hamburger and a malted, and buy an ugly New World writing to see what the poets in Ghana are doing these days. I go on to the bank, and Miss Stillwagon, first name Linda, I once heard, doesn't even look up my balance for once in her life. And in the Golden Griffin, I get a little Verlaine for Patsy, with drawings by Bonnard, although I do think of Hesiod, Tran's Richmond Lattimore, or Brendan Behan's new play, or Le Balcon, or Les Dagues of Genet. But I don't. I stick with Verlaine, after practically going to sleep with quandariness. And for Mike, I just stroll into the Park Lane liquor store and ask for a bottle of Strega, and then I go back where I came from, to Sixth Avenue, at the tobacconist in the Ziegfeld Theater, and casually ask for a carton of Gauloises and a carton of Picayunes and a New York Post with her face on it. And I am sweating a lot by now and thinking of leaning on the John door in the fog spot while she whispered a song along the keyboard to Mal Waldron. And everyone and I stopped breathing.
I took a trip on the train. And I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane, and I thought about you. Two or three cars parked under the stars, a winding stream. Moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam, same old dream. At every stop that we made, oh, I thought about you. But when I pulled down the shade, then I really got blue. Peek through the crack and looked at the track, the one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you. Thought about you. Thought about you.
Thanks for tuning into Nightlights. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday evening at 11 for the music of Miles Davis and Sam Rivers. Nightlights is engineered by Michael Pascash and produced in the studios of WFIU at Indiana University. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.